Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shay's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shay's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Infuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hi.
The show's namesake, BJ Shay, is on assignment, but we got Joey D.
On top of the podcast to you, Rev. Happy late St. Paddy's Day.
Happy late St. Paddy's Day. On today's show, I will talk with Mr. Gerrit von Kallenbach, and we will get hyped for Falcon and the Winter Soldier and the Snyder Cut of Justice League. Yes. But of course, we'll get to the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. It's going to have our blogs, podcast, and more. Or just search for us, BJ Shay's Geek Nation, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Radio.com, and iTunes to find us.
Exactly. And lots of stuff has dropped this week. The first one being the Snyder Cut of Justice League. It popped out on the 18th. And right now, none of us have seen it because it's 4 hours and it's only a Friday and we haven't quite gotten to it yet.
I got stuff to do.
I know, but I am planning on seeing it this weekend. 4 hour movie set up into 6 chapters. So, and I mean, you're doing it at home. It's on HBO Max, so you can watch it in little tidbits.
Yeah, we heard a couple of reviews from some listeners on our main show, and people are liking it, which is shocking to me because the first one was not good.
They had to really, like, change some stuff around
And I've heard some interesting, and then maybe these are just rumors, but I've heard the fact that basically when Joss Whedon had come in, he didn't use a lot of Zack Snyder's original stuff. And that's always been the point of contention, the reason why they wanted to release the Snyder Cut. But it was so bad, apparently. And this is just saying that there's articles out there that have stated that Joss was kind of a little butthurt about the fact that Age of Ultron didn't click with everybody, and it really wasn't the masterpiece everyone was hoping for. And he kind of took that saltiness when he was going and he was working on this movie, because he came in a little late and was trying to, you know, spice it up. But it got so bad, apparently, he was just kind of interchanging scenes. And, like, this one worked in Avengers, so we're going to use it in this one. And going so far as to even call Wonder Woman Natasha, like, when referencing as basically just, oh, we're, you know, the female superhero is just kind of, replaceable in either instance. They're going to do the same thing, and they're basically there for the same aspect.
That's not a good look.
No, yeah. It's not. So hearing that a lot of people are very excited about this has me stoked. If you have HBO Max, you can watch it. And if you don't have HBO Max but you want to watch it, well, get HBO Max, and you'll be able to. No free trials. They've done that with HBO Max, so you can't just be like, oh, I'm just going to get it for this one thing. Still got to spend the $15. So at the very least, it'll cost you $15 to watch the movie.
I mean, I saw that Hulu has a thing where you can add on HBO, but I'm not 100% sure. I know Hulu does a lot of add-ons, so it might be cheaper to go that route if you already have a Hulu account.
Yeah.
So definitely check it out.
Yeah, exactly. Let us know what you think about that. We'll probably do a full review next week or maybe in 2 weeks. I don't know if it's going to cause a spectacular because I haven't seen it yet.
Yep. As of the time of this recording, It is currently on the tomato meter, 77%. Mind you, it's two separate movies. There is Justice League and there's Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Yeah.
So you can find the reviews or the ratings for both separately. Audience score, as of right now, over 2,500 plus ratings, 97%.
Jeez. Wow. Like, when you hear, like, that many reviews, the first thing I think is review bomb. But usually those are negative. Like, I know Wonder Woman 84 had to deal with a lot of negative reviews before people had even seen them.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you, I don't know if you have to be like an Amazon verified sort of thing when they do that, when you're making reviews for that. But at least they're waiting till the movie was released before letting the users actually review it.
And you can, like, I know if you go to the bottom, like, of the page of Rotten Tomatoes, you can see all critics. You can see top critics, fresh, rotten. So these are just, I think, the critics, like the fancy critics. Not so much the what the people are saying.
Right on.
Yeah,
this whole movie revolved around Superman, despite not really seeming like it. So I wonder if this new cut, like, just portrays his character completely different. Because I am so confused on how the ending could be any better than it was.
And it's interesting in that sort of aspect because I have seen stills that you do get to see Superman in the black costume, which they didn't use in the Justice League that Joss Whedon did.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of cut out that whole storyline. So I'm hoping that that'll help it make a lot more sense.
And hopefully the Flash is back in a way that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
And I liked his version of the Flash, too. But I did. I mean, we did see that they did film some new scenes with Jared Leto as Joker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping this will redeem him.
Yes.
Well, like, redeem that character, that version.
There you go, there you go.
Because he's a phenomenal actor.
Yep. Another thing that is out that'll hopefully take up your time is the inaugural episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I'm still digesting WandaVision.
I know, right? They got you on your left right there.
And, I see what you did.
Yeah, thank you. And looking at this point in time, it's going to be episodic as the WandaVision was. So you'll have to see it every week. And
wait, this isn't a movie?
No.
It's a series.
Where have I been?
I don't know where you've been. But
you were right here.
Yeah, the first episode's about 46 minutes long, and I don't know if that includes, like, you know, 12 minutes of credits or anything along those lines like WandaVision did. I don't know how it's going on with that, but it did drop today at midnight, so I know some people have actually watched it, staying up till midnight to do that, mm-hmm. need their MCU fix. An interesting point about this, it looks like the all of Falcon and the Winter Soldier's villains will tie directly into the fallout of Avengers Endgame. According to the showrunner Malcolm Spellman, the show's villains with an S, so that's interesting, are acting in response to the blip, which brought back half of all life in the universe after the Avengers successfully defeated Thanos. So it'll be interesting to see how they go along with that. And watching the trailers and stuff along those lines, you see that, you know, Bucky and Sam are on the same side, but it's not like they're going to be super buddy-buddy to start it off with. You know, friends of Cap on different coins and coming from different parts of their lives, basically being brought together because of what happened in Endgame.
I hope they do some sort of recap for us in the first episode that lets us know exactly where we're at in the timeline, because of all this jumping around and stuff, I'm getting a little confused.
That's a good point, too, because we know that WandaVision happens like 3 weeks after the blip. Spider-Man Far From Home happened about 8 months mm-hmm. after, so we have to see where this fits into that timeline.
Yeah, exactly.
And very excited for all that. Again, I want to see people's responses to both the first episode of this and then also the Snyder Cut, and we'll discuss those in the future. Now we need to get with our good friend Mr. Gareth von Kallenbach from Skewed and Reviewed. Gareth von Kallenbach joins us from Skewed and Reviewed, that is SKNR.net, and there's lots of information you can get there, from comic books to movies to video games to so much more. And let's start on the video game route with a little Doom news.
Yes, well, it's, you know, they say all good things must come to an end, so we'll have to see if this truly is the end. But the other day, Doom Eternal has put out the second of their expansions. Now, they did put out one, The Ancient Gods Part 1, prior, and it was significantly harder than the base gameplay, which even in and of itself was also very hard. A lot of very specific time precision jumps that are definitely rage-inducing, and then adding things like a fan that you have to shoot while in the air, and if you don't fast enough, it pushes you back away, so on and so forth. Well, the new expansion is out, and what is interesting is the publicity behind it is billing it as the end to the Doomslayer's journey, and they're saying, you know, this is obviously there have been Doom games going back for a long time, and this is in reference to Bethesda's, for lack of a better word, reboot that started a few years ago, and they're saying, you know, this is the Doom, the new one, and then Doom Eternal, and they're saying this is the end of his journey. Now, obviously, does this mean there won't be Doom games around in the future? Probably not, but it may indicate that perhaps Bethesda is going to put the franchise on hold for a few years, maybe revisit Quake, maybe revisit Rage. You know, I'm looking at specifically the id studio that makes these, or perhaps a new franchise. So who knows?
it'll be interesting if they go to Quake, because I loved Doom, but Quake had this otherworldly feel to it, especially with the fact that they were using now polygons as opposed to the pixel art. So it's one of those things where I don't know if it's necessary now the way graphics are, but the monsters in that one were truly terrifying.
They were, and I think what's interesting is people forget there is indeed Quake Champions, which came out a few years ago, which was the, you know, the free-to-play online one with the upgrade possibilities. Now, that was not the traditional campaign. That was essentially, you know, load up and go, deathmatch, for lack of a better word, in some cases. So, you know, that's the big mystery. And, of course, in recent news, as you know, we've talked about their merger with Xbox, and that's all finalized. So, you know, that's the question. And, of course, everybody will now look for the next showcase. Are they going to tie it in with the next Xbox showcase? Are they going to wait until around E3 time? Who knows? But I think we can all agree that something will be coming down the road. The question is what, where, and when.
Exactly. And you did mention Bethesda and Xbox. They've just announced that a bunch of the old Bethesda games are available on the Xbox Game Pass, including stuff that, like, my perennial favorite being Skyrim and Fallout. A lot of the versions of the Elder Scrolls Online, as well as Fallout 76 and a bunch of the other things that they've done, like Doom and some other stuff, are available on that Game Pass. So if you want to check those out, the Game Pass is really a good way to go with a lot of that stuff. We do need to move.
Absolutely.
And let's move on to some movie news, because the Indiana Jones 5 is still happening, right?
Correct. They are supposed to, in theory, had the pandemic not hit, they would have been filming already. And apparently, pre-production, they're still putting it down that it will come out summer of next year. Obviously, I'm kind of in that category of, I want to see the camera start rolling. You know, I hate to draw the comparison, but it kind of reminded me of the Uncharted film that was constantly coming. It was coming, it was coming, and this person was going to direct, and this person was going to star, and then the director. And it was only when they started filming with, you know, Holland and everything, and they got it moving, I said, okay, now I can honestly say that the camera's rolling, it's coming.
Yeah, and so there's other news, though, with Indiana Jones, including a 4K release, right?
Correct. And so what is happening is on June 8th, there will be a 4K ultra-high definition box set of the four movies coming out. And, of course, the movies will also have digital copies available. They aren't saying if the digital versions are 4K, you know. Currently going to be, it's a 5-disc set, so you have 4K remastered scans from the original negatives. They've done extensive visual effects to, you know, make these things as sharp as they possibly can. What is interesting is it's supposed to have 7 hours of bonus material, and what is really intriguing to me is that 7 hours of extra that haven't been updated from previous releases. So do you read that as saying the movies are getting 4K, here comes the 7 hours of prior extras, or is this a brand new 7 hours of extras?
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's just like, what does 7 hours of extras even constitute? Are they talking about commentary? Is it just deleted scenes? Is it like ads or promo materials? Because when they say that, basically, I feel a lot of the times that they're just kind of throwing anything they had on like the editing room floor. And the fact that this movie's it started off being at least 40 years old at this point in time. Like, how much of that is just weird, random stuff that they just kind of came across?
Exactly. There'll probably be a lot more bonus material for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, because that was done at a time. Let's remember, first three films were not done at a time when you had a lot of bonus material, because they were predominantly put out on videotape. And it was when they went to DVD, you started to see bonus material, that sort of thing. Crystal Skull was made in a more modern age where clearly the DVD and bonus features were figured in. Mm-hmm. I think you're right, though. I think it's a simple case of there have been so many documentaries, behind the scenes, things done for the home video releases on DVD. I'm sure they basically have gone through that. It might be a mix of old and new, but you know, the current plan is that the, you know, it's coming in June, so we'll see. And I think that what they're kind of hoping is maybe, just maybe, things improve enough that by the time they roll this out, they can say, oh, guess what? We've now started, you know, really advanced pre-production beyond the script, beyond the planning. We're actually building the sets and, you know, getting things ready to film.
Well, and I know before we get out of here, there's been some big breaking news. It came out on Wednesday. We have talked and speculated a lot about the theme parks opening and whatever capacity, and it seems like Disneyland has thrown open the doors or will be fairly soon.
Correct. What they've announced is that Disneyland and Disneyland's California Adventure will open at 15% capacity on April 30th.
Ooh.
And obviously, they are going to be similar to how Florida had it. California is citing that they have had a significant decrease in infections, that vaccination programs are really ramping up there, and they feel that it's okay now to do this. Now, obviously, there will be some rules. There'll be, you know, you got to wear your mask, you got to space. They're going to do the temperature and health checks when you come in. Mm-hmm. And you must buy tickets in advance. There isn't going to be one of those walk up with your annual pass and just walk in. You have to say, I want to come on this date, and buy your ticket before. If you show up, you're probably going to be out of luck, because you can bet that in the first couple weeks, you're going to see a flood. Look at their Touch of Disney tasting event, sold out within a matter of hours, you know, so people are anxious to get back in there. And I've also been told that there are some things, like, for example, you are not going to see the Avengers campus opening just yet. People have said, well, there's going to be some entertainment, but there'll be certain restrictions. For example, fireworks. You can't have something, parades, where large numbers of people, even at 15%, are going to gather and remain stationary at one time. You're going to have to keep, you know, essentially, you're going to have to keep it moving. My question that I haven't had a firm answer on this yet is how they are going to handle the attractions. There was some talk initially several months ago that one of the problems was that there was, how do you sanitize the rides when they're essentially on a timer? You think Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
Boat comes in, people go off, people come on. Sure, you can space them out every other row, but if you stop the ride to put, you know, run a disinfecting cloth over it, everyone else who's in the ride has to stop as well. So
that's
an issue. And so we've heard stories that, well, you know, perhaps certain in-the-dark attractions may not happen. Like, one that I'm really curious about would be the bigger Star Wars attraction, because from what I understand, it's like 15 to 20 minutes to go through that, and you're enclosed pretty much the entire time. So there has been some talk that if it is an extended attraction, perhaps Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, where you're enclosed for a much longer time and not in an open air setting, they may have more restrictive rules to them. Some of them may not even be able to happen. That's something I'm still trying to get a clarification on. And then, of course, you have the issue that they've had in Florida with people get in the dark and say, okay, mask comes off and I'm going to open my mouth and scream my head off. And you can't do that.
Right.
But, you know, one step at a time. The fact is they are going to open at 15% capacity end of April. So positive steps.
Exactly. And it just reminds me of the Japanese roller coaster where they had this sign, please just keep all of your screaming on the inside, which I feel that we've all been doing for at least a year at this point. Gareth,
scream in the heart. That's correct.
Scream in your heart. And we'll continue to do that. I know hopefully some people will go out there and have some fun, do it safely. And Gareth, I know you'll have all the information as it continues to come out. People can find that at Skewed and Reviewed. Again, that is SKNR.net. Thank you so much, Gareth.
Anytime. Take care.
Thank you so much, Gareth. And now it is time for
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what do you got for us?
So I very much love hearing, like, Easter eggs or just, like, behind-the-scenes info.
Yeah.
But apparently there's a lot of those behind-the-scenes tidbits that everyone has just accepted as truth because it's been around for so long that we just agree that it's real.
Okay.
But, you know, TotalNerdRanker.com actually came out and debunked 16 Hollywood movie myths that aren't actually true.
Oh, so maybe are these like Mandela effects where people believe that they've been there all along, but they truly are not?
Right.
Oh. Like,
the first one on the list is the rumor, the myth that Dorothy made less than the dog on The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, what? Yeah. I've heard about that. Yeah, because the people had said over the years that the dog had just like, I don't know, I just had, like, I had a better contract than the woman, Judy Garland, who was Dorothy.
Right. So the rumor myth was said that Terry was the 5-year-old terrier or whatever who played Toto. You know, made $125 a week while Garland only made $35 a week. But the truth is, you know, she is a human being and the main character. She did, in fact, make more money than the dog. It is true, though, that the dog made $125 a week, which is actually pretty extraordinary for a trained animal at the time.
Yeah.
Because they were hard to come by at the time. But Garland actually made $500 a week.
Oh, there you go. Not $35.
Although it was still roughly $2,500 less per week than her male co-stars.
Shocking. Wow.
Right at that time?
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you pay the dog a lot, it'd be fine if you own the dog as well. You're the main actress and you own the dog.
Yeah. that double dip there.
Like, you want to just do it for the story headline.
It's like when the actors are also and a producer and maybe key grip or something along those lines. I'm going to do all of these different jobs.
I took a huge pay cut. Then I also gave the director a ton of money. The director is also me.
Do you guys remember that rumor? It was especially, I think, when we were in high school, so a good 15 years ago. Oh, God. I think I remember seeing all those, you know, oh, my God, videos about it. In the first Lion King movie, when Simba just kind of exasperatedly just, and this, like, dust kind of goes off.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, it says the word sex on the dust cloud.
I remember that.
Oh, my God. That's actually not true. It was actually supposed to be the special effects team sneaking in SFX for special effects.
Oh.
It just happens to look like SEX.
And you know what? I mean, SFX is definitely something that looks like SEX.
Right.
So, I mean, and there's been a long history of strange things being inserted into
Disney movies.
The one that I remember is, I believe it was The Adventurers or The Adventurers Down Under.
Topless lady.
Yeah, in one of the, they're flying on an albatross and going through the city, and in one of the little windows, there is a little porn frame of a topless lady
like
in
one
of the windows. Yeah.
Not just a cartoon lady.
Yeah, not even a cartoon.
How does that fly?
Because it's so fast,
it's
you have
so
to
quick.
Slow it down.
It's like Fight Club, inserting the little bits of porn. Everyone's seen it, but nobody has actually seen it.
Right.
It's subliminal.
Weird. I wonder why they would do that.
Disney. Because
they can.
Yeah, well, Disney being weirdos.
It's just whoever's making it.
Yeah, the animators just trying to be, quote-unquote silly.
The SFX thing is really funny, too, because in your brain, if you think that way, your mind fills it in to be what you're most likely those letters are.
Which is what this article says. It says, to this day, it still remains a bit of a Rorschach test. You see what you want to see.
I probably saw sex.
I didn't see it, obviously, until I saw it like on the internet and someone screenshot it or whatever.
Because you see FSX, what are you going to think?
Yeah, I'm not thinking SFX.
Saxophone.
Yes.
There we go.
This one I thought was real for the longest time, and I thought that was kind of cool and motivational. You'd always see it on posters. But there was this myth that Harrison Ford was actually a struggling actor at the time and was hired for Han Solo while doing carpentry work or some version. He was a janitor on the set of Star Wars.
That's what I've always heard, that he was a carpenter and just basically caught the eye of Lucas.
Right. So the truth is, in the early days of his career, Harrison Ford was definitely a carpenter. When acting gigs weren't turning up, it was a trade he'd fall back on to support his family. But according to Ford, he wasn't working on the Star Wars set as a carpenter. According to the actor, he got the role from standing in for screen tests for director George Lucas. I had helped George Lucas audition other actors for principal parts, and with no expectation or indication that I might be considered for the part of Han. And I was quite surprised when I was offered the part.
That's interesting, just because at that point it was like maybe George just like saw that in him, but he wanted him to work a little bit more. And it's like, no, just keep playing Han for all of these test screenings to see if he's got the chemistry without letting him know. Let him be casual about it.
It could also be one of those things where George really wanted him to play the part, but other people didn't. So he said, okay, well, I'll have him do the other role over and over and over again until it convinced the people.
And look how well it works. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
And man, thank God he did, because I cannot imagine anyone else. else.
Nobody else.
This one scared the crap out of me once I heard about it, and then I accidentally watched the movie and saw it for myself. Like, I freaked the hell out.
Okay.
It reminded me of, like, when you would watch the, like, oh, it's a car driving, you know, through, you know, the hills, and
oh, okay.
That same, like, oh my God, it's right there, it's looking at me. It was the ghost in the background of Three Men and a Baby.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
Yes, no. Yeah.
So the myth was that the house, do you remember the Three Men and a Baby movie?
No, not at all.
Okay, it was Ted Danson. Steve Guttenberg and
Tom Selleck.
Yes, thank you so much.
So there were three guys, different, you know, Tom Selleck, I think, was like an architect, and then
one of them was a cartoonist,
which was Guttenberg, and then Ted Danson was an actor. And then apparently a chick he had hooked up with got pregnant, and she just left the baby on their doorstep, and Ted Danson wasn't even there.
Yeah.
So it was like these two guys trying to deal with it, and there's some other guy.
Hilarity ensues.
Ted Danson like made a deal with somebody, but he didn't know it was for drugs, so they had drugs stop. It gets kind of crazy.
Sounds like The Hangover.
But they live in this
with a baby. Oh, yeah.
Sweet
a baby
ass
too.
Apartment. Like, they had, like, it was huge. It was a really cool apartment. They each had their own area. But there's a shot where Ted Danson's mom comes by and she picks up the baby. And then as they're walking off screen, you see in the window what looks like a dead child. It was supposedly cursed because a kid who like died in that house before filming or during filming.
Ooh.
That was the myth. And it scared the crap out of me when I saw it in the window. Like, legit. But it was actually filmed on a soundstage, not in a house. So that was one element to debunk. And the little boy you see in the background, it's not actually a little boy, but it was rather a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson.
Yes.
Because Danson's character is an actor, so he has several of these cutouts throughout the house. And now that I have a better visual of it,
yeah,
that is definitely Ted Danson.
It's,
like, the TV I watched originally was not a great TV.
I mean, yeah, this was like, what, the early 90s or something. So you still had like CRT televisions, which were a little fuzzy at the time.
And even 15 years ago, seeing it on a TV was a little fuzzy.
And it was basically the cutout was kind of folded in half. It was him wearing a top hat, but you couldn't see like the top hat part because it was just the way that it was set up. And it looks really creepy. It looks like a little kid given that sort of evil, like the Kubrick look where you like tilt your face forward, grin menacingly, and then be like looking at them. The super creepy look. So I believed it was for the longest time.
So this one I'm very surprised to hear because like I thought this was very real. Apparently it is not. And it's about a more recent movie, more recent than Three Men and a Baby. So in The Dark Knight, when Heath Ledger, you know, explodes the Joker explodes the hospital. That pause when he's trying to get the explosion to go and he's like hitting the thing.
Yeah.
And then the explosion happens. They say that that was improvised. He was just like, come on, why is this not working? The detonation, you know, there was a legit malfunction.
Are you saying that's not?
So this legend has likely become so popularized because Ledger's incredible performance and untimely death. It is simply more fun to believe the beloved actor was so deep in character that was able to pull off this quick adjustment. But director Christopher Nolan has clarified the truth. What the special effects supervisor Chris worked out is if we put in a little beat where the first set of explosions stops as if something's gone wrong, we could actually take a principal actor, walk him out of the building that's about to be destroyed, and literally drop the building to the ground. The beat was intentional safety measure to protect Ledger, not a mistake saved by Ledger's improvisation. And I think the part that convinces people is that clap when he's in the jail cell. I believe that has been said that was improvised. So I think people just assume this was too.
And he was such a good actor that you could believe everything was just
him
so deeply in character. And I think maybe even just the legend of like Jared Leto being a weirdo as Joker on set, maybe kind of lended a little more credence to it as it evolved. But I mean, I had heard that ever since The Dark Knight had come out.
I do have another Wizard of Oz one.
Oh, is this about the munchkin that hung himself or hanged himself?
Oh, gosh.
So, when Dorothy the Scarecrow and the Tin Man skip down the yellow brick road, an actor who was one of the munchkins can be seen hanging himself in the background. That is not true, according to them, because some people are like, oh, is it really that? It's not entirely clear, but MGM, the studio that produced the film, has long contended that it's a shadow cast by a crane, which was one of several animals brought in from the LA Zoo by director Victor Fleming. Others have said it's simply a misplaced non-hanging crew member on a piece of equipment. The definitive proof is not a performer, however, comes from the fact that the Munchkin actors weren't even on set until after the sequence was already in the can.
Ha-ha!
That's just what they want you to... That's what
Rev, here's a cover-up.
Yeah, who knows? Like, I'm not going to worry about that one. I'm just going to assume that it was not because of how horrifying that thing is, really, at that point in time.
Let's look at the brighter side.
Yeah, exactly. The bright side of the yellow brick road and not the deep, dark, seedy underbelly.
I do have one other quick one.
What's
that? It was not true that Jared Leto sent Margot Robbie a dead rat on the set of Suicide Squad.
Oh, I just mentioned that. Okay, yeah. So that's not true.
Nope. He sent her cinnamon buns.
Aww. In the shape of a dead rat, though, right?
He said, unless the cinnamon buns were laced with minced rat meat, no. He's like, not true at all.
Aww.
Gave her a lot of cinnamon buns.
Aww, womp womp.
Till next time, guys. Stay nerdy.